Welcome to my Bob Thurman podcast. I'm so grateful some good friends enabled me to present them to you. If you enjoy them and find them useful, please think of becoming a member of Tibet House US to help preserve Tibetan culture. Tibet House is the Dalai Lama's cultural center in America. All best wishes. Have a great day.
This podcast extra was originally broadcast on Facebook July 4th, 2019. To watch the full video, look in the links below.
Okay. Greetings. Happy 4th of July. 4th of July is our Independence Day. And from my point of view about reality, it probably should be Interdependence Day. But independence is also good. We don't need an interdependence where the individual parts don't have independent responsibility toward the others, so that their participation in the interdependence is voluntary, joyful, and has no sense of it being coerced or sort of collectivized, you know? So in that sense, our sort of American, you know, in its good sense, the ideal sense, which still is there, although it's been genocide from the start in a way, and yet there's always been some strand of trying to find something new, something different than the usual tribal warfare of sort of recorded history. So I want to greet you on this day, and I want to address on this day the political revolution, which we need now more than we did even 4 years ago when Bernie Sanders, the great Senator Bernie Sanders, was calling for one. But unfortunately, at the moment, he is participating in a non-revolutionary form of politics, which is competing individual against individual within the Democratic Party, although he's an independent, actually, himself, but within the Democratic Party, competing with a bunch of other really great people. They're all great. And they all have the guts and the ambition and the energy to seek to be leader of the free world, quote unquote, president of the United States of America. And yet by sort of having this ego clash, what the press derisively calls, corporate media derisively calls circular firing squad of a big primary process that the media will get off on by agitating and trying to seek conflicts and promote the conflicts between them, not to mention their conflicts with the media, which is not a revolutionary process. It is now the standard American electoral process as totally corrupted by money and vested interests, which has resulted in the catastrophe of the Trump government. Never mind Republican, Democrat, it doesn't matter. They chose the Republican Party, the libertarians who backed Trump, who don't want any government, actually, and in a way hired him to destroy the government, in fact, destroy all regulations, destroy any power larger than their oligarchic billionaire power. And that's precipitated the crisis that we're in now. Of course, it was started some time back. And in a way, the sort of racist, sexist, atavistic, you know, let's get back to the 15th century or the 5th century BC, if possible, caveman sort of thing. Let's get back to that attitude has been building for some time. And it's a cyclical thing in America. There's that sort of, you know, authoritarian and destructive element in our politics. And then there's the idealistic, liberating element in our politics. Just as on this day, we celebrate the Declaration of Independence from the British Empire. But there were many people in the colonies in those days who rather thought of themselves as agents of the British Empire, and very much not just the Benedict Arnolds, but others who didn't actively oppose the revolution, but actually were quite not into it. And they had enjoyed being part of the British Empire. And then they asserted themselves again and again at different stages, like a time of McKinley, time of Jackson. They reasserted the kind of imperialist motive within our country, and not just the revolutionary liberationist motive, which is the one we celebrate today. And I want to celebrate, and I want to heed dear Bernie Sanders' call for a political revolution, and I want to call him to embrace political revolution starting now, not waiting to win on the sort of conventional ego competition of the conventional primaries within a party, and then within a conventional type of money-backed politics, battle of billions between billionaires. That's not a political revolution. So we need the revolution right away, and here is the idea for the revolution right away. We just saw a few days ago the first Democratic primary debate run by NBC, a big corporation itself, which makes a lot of its money with ads from pharmaceutical companies, oil companies, food companies, all kinds of companies that control our society now, and the companies and its owners control that, and have been ruining our society, petroleum industry. So naturally, that network and the other networks are not really wanting to hear what they're calling derisively leftist or socialist or for the working man sort of thing. And they think it's sort of misguided. And they were all for Joe Biden, who they felt was a manageable liberal person who could also respect the owners, which is what they want. And on the other hand, the true working man revolution is not actually against wealthy people. That's one key point. And that's where, again, I want Bernie to do a revolution in his own rhetoric. They're working because wealthy people also work. And actually, that is why they get so wealthy, they can't stop working. Even they no longer need to work, they still do. They put their capital to work, but they also worry about it. They make decisions, they make investments. They actually continue to work. And so they are working people. They are just working people who've actually gotten themselves in an overstressed situation by accumulating too much stored energy, which is what capital is. Capital is stored labor products, stored energy. And by accumulating too much of that, they then are in the mode, in addition to making more, of defending it, of worrying about other people taking it from them, of creating a kind of false network of relations where people who flatter them and are trying actually to deceive them become the ones they like, and people who are normal with them, they perceive as sort of not respecting them or something. And it's very hard to be wealthy, actually. It's hard to be poor, and it's hard to be wealthy. And what is the easiest is to be in the middle, actually. Wealthy enough to have enough to eat and to feed and to share and to give to your friends and family, but not so wealthy that everyone hunts you. And you don't, also the need is not so huge because the wealth is more shared around you. So that's ideal, you know. And you can then compete in other ways, for compete in beauty, compete in quality, in lifestyle, in fashion, you know, in creativity. You can compete in other ways than just money, you know, if you're more in the middle. America's great prosperity after the war had to do with, you know, from Roosevelt's time on and through the World War, reducing the inequality among Americans and taxing very high level the super wealthy, and therefore having a huge, powerful, unionized middle class, and then still too many poor people, and then the racial problem, of course, was still there. But nevertheless, basically more balanced society, and therefore capable of producing much more creativity and much happier, good vibes, good, you know, better art, better music, this kind of thing. And when it gets worse, then it sort of gets all gloomy and dark and violent and commercial, and it's not so good, the art, you know. So here's the idea. We take those 20 people, and led by Bernie, let's say, basically, really. He kind of is the leader. The Democratic National Committee, worrying about the amount of money they can get from wealthy people, are nervous about Bernie. And they're trying to field some people and do some policies that are not really Bernie's, because to reassure their bigger donors. And in a way, that's practical, because until you actually have changed Citizens United, and you have done something about the corruption in the court system, and something about the financing of elections with the super PACs and the whole thing, until you've done something about it, if you forswear them completely, you'll probably be crushed by it. And you will not be able to succeed, it is quite likely. And getting, even if, for example, Bernie, with a very, very progressive campaign, you know, Scandinavian socialist platform and policies, could not get them passed a money-dependent Senate, which is, and the billionaires will spend any sum of money to at least have the Mitch McConnells of this world and maybe try to get the House back on by scaring people about socialism, where then he would just be up there flailing away again and not be able to actually get done what he wants to get done. So therefore, it has to be different. Bernie has to start a revolution now, and here's the way to start it. All those 20 people, Elizabeth, Kamala, everyone, even some of the wild ones like Tulsi, and some of the not well-known ones but who have great policies like Jay Inslee and so on, they all get together and they decide. They bracket the question of who's going to be the one boss. Or maybe they decide we'll have a triumvirate or a committee of four or a committee of three, or a committee of five that will be the boss, whoever nominally has the name president and vice president. They decide they'll have a certain committee based on the major problems that they face. And then the others will look at their own experience and qualifications, and they'll discuss them all with each other. And forgetting a word for the moment about theatrical ability and charisma, but although that is important for the main spokesperson, let's say, or some of the main spokespeople. And they will decide which cabinet position, which kind of secretary in the cabinet, in the presidential executive cabinet, would I be able to do what I most care about? And of course, Jay Inslee is the climate person who would make a great climate president, but is not. He's doing a great job as the executive of the state of Washington at the moment. But he could do that job from the Department of a revamped Department of Energy. He could do it really well, climate change, or the Environmental Protection Agency, either of those, as secretary of a really well-funded, a really not owned by petroleum industry, either energy committee or Environmental Protection Committee, one of the two places. Elizabeth Warren, who wants to deal with the financial system, who is well-qualified, best qualified to do that, she would be an awesome president, secretary of treasury. Someone like Castro, who is Latino and could have a different attitude and be perceived differently in Latin America, our major allies all there in the South, in our South, he would be an excellent Secretary of State. Cory Booker, who deals with violence, who's dealt with inner cities and difficulties, he could be a newly revamped, you know, Department of Urban Development and dealing also with inequality and so forth. Bernie himself, he could be Secretary of Health. I don't think we have a Department of Health, Education, and Welfare. They're split into separate departments now. But he could do health and welfare in some way, whatever way he would do it, where he would then take care of the working man. Or he could be a new combination of health and labor, for example, with his union development, or to restore the unions. And so forth. You know, that would be up for them to decide. And so by bracketing the presidential question, they would decide, okay, we will have a cabinet and a team. We'll have a dream team that we will offer to the Pete Buttigieg, who I really like, and everybody does, and he's so smart. He could be the most amazing Secretary of Education, unbelievably good. Beto, who's kind of a Lone Ranger type, you know, from south of the border and from Texas, he could be a Secretary of Interior. I don't know, there's no one is a farmer among them for the Secretary of Agriculture. We would need a real farmer, an organic farmer, to do that, to sort of a little bit, break up the big food combine monopolies and the petro-style of agriculture and pesticide and very destructive food processing and food production methods that we have that have to be changed. And so I don't know who they would do, but they would figure that out. And then they would say in their primary discussions, they would tell the media if they want to have these primaries, then they will have to do what the candidates want. And they would tell the DNC they have to do what the candidates want. And the candidates want to run as a team, the dream team. And that's why I'm saying this today. I was hoping, I wrote this about 2 months ago, but I'm not really a normal political activist. I'm just retired as a professor, ivory tower style, ancient classical professor. But I didn't publicize it, but I want it to be publicized today on the July 4th day. And I want to float this idea in the world of the dream team. And some new departments they could say they were going to create, for example, Marianne Williamson with her love campaign, which I really think is wonderful and I like it. Other people think that's not political and what are we doing with that? But I like it, and therefore there should be a Department of Peace that can talk. It's the State Department, in a way, is like the Department of Peace in that it should be helping deal with international problems and conflicts by diplomacy rather than military means. But a Peace Department would also do positive things of seeing preventively where flashpoints like poverty, tribal issues, minorities really, or majorities that create like things like Rwanda or Sudan kind of problems, and proactively get involved in those kinds of situations to avoid terrible catastrophes and slaughters of people and Ebola outbreaks and things like that. So a Peace Department would be really, really important to work with the War Department and to save the War Department from having to do things that it's not suited to do, support the UN, for example, and so on in a new way. So I think she would be a great love ambassador for America and would be a great peace secretary. But anyway, those are things that are not for me to decide. They're for the candidates to decide amongst themselves. And then as they do that, and the American people get introduced to the idea that whoever they are going to vote in as president, that president is going to come with this team. So that, for example, if, say, take a Biden, I thought, could be a good defense secretary because he's an old hand in all the Congress and has been a vice president and he knows the system. And maybe he can help the people in the Defense Department to find a budget, to find out where all their resources are, which they never can tell any accounting firm. We've spent billions of dollars under Chuck Grassley's efforts, to the very nice Chuck Grassley, to find a budget for the Defense Department, and they can't do it because they can't inventory what they have. They don't know how they spend their money, and that's not acceptable any longer. So I thought that would be a good job for him. But the point is, if, say, he were moved to the presidency, or if Elizabeth Warren was moved to the presidency due to their popularity more and more emerging, let's say, as the president, or Kamala Harris, or Cory Booker, then the cabinet position they would have filled, they will see to filling with a good person who will fit with their agenda, if you follow me. But that decision will not change the fact that everybody else is going to be there in the cabinet. And also that will represent the diversity. So, for example, if Bernie is a fallback for Bernie is Department of Health, Department of Labor type of thing, then they can shout and scream the unfit people who are deepening our crisis, our planetary crisis, They can scream that he's a socialist and he's going to be creating Venezuela or Cuba or something. But the point is, the answer to that is he's not going to control all of the policy. He's going to work on labor and he's going to do what he's going to work on the social safety system, greatly to the health system and the labor system. You know, the wages of the regular working people. He's going to represent them within the cabinet. And the cabinet, you know, we have, you know, healing capitalism, Elizabeth Warren. We have other people who are pro-capitalism. So they can't, you know, the diversity will be represented in the dream team, if you follow me. And then also they could even transcend the party system in this. They might figure out that they would invite certain people who are actually nominally and by family tradition or Republican, and reach across the aisle, that sort of thing that people talk about, to ones who are not these kind of extremists like McConnell, not the ones who have backed the destruction that's been going on for the last years and will be going on until the next election. They're the ones who are not into that libertarian, anti-government destruction. But there are Republicans who are responsible to their constituents, who want to see the right thing done for the people. There are. And they might bring some of them into the team and identify them ahead of time and say they don't have to agree to it, those people, because they don't know if this will work. And so they don't want to be considered traitors by their party. But they ahead of time can show that they are working as a dream team in a crisis situation to correct the self-destructive, you know, dive that we're being taken on by Captain Trump and co-Captain Pence, who are enacting a program. What people are not really realizing, they're not really enacting a Republican program. They are enacting a libertarian program. And a libertarian program means no government. So they are actually destroying the government, is what they're doing. And they are, because they falsely believe the people who fund them, because they are just for sale, they are hired people. Trump is a hired actor, really, in a show. And what the people who are hiring them want is no government that is more powerful than themselves. That's the essence of the libertarian. It's why it leads to the strongman syndrome and dictatorship. Because the super wealthy oligarch who says we don't need government regulation and we don't need government, period, then they are, but de facto, when government is destroyed, then they are the biggest force. And then they, in a sense, become the government within whatever they're interested in. And then maybe they will fight with each other, you know, et cetera, or they'll collaborate. They'll collaborate, and then after they'll fight with each other. Because there's no satisfaction for someone who wants total dominance and total power. You know, they're never satisfied. So this is the thing, and this will be where America will actually, as we did in the World War, it will save the world, which is what America was designed to do. Actually, pursuit of happiness means saving people and allowing them to be happy. That is the unique thing that was in the American Constitution. Other governments have always said, kings and emperors, they've always said people have no right to be happy. You know, people just have to be ordered. People are not safe to be, and religious figures have followed them and distorted the teachings of Jesus and Buddha and Moses and all kinds of people, which was a teaching that human beings are great. They're beloved by the divine. They're wonderful, intelligent beings, which is the natural view of what all the founders of those great movements felt. But then they were corrupted by rulers and institutions and high priests over the centuries, including every single one of them, in which they said people have no right to be happy. They have to suffer. They have to work. They have to follow the orders. If I want to have a war with my neighboring king, they have to fight in that war and die over it. And, you know, they'll be happy later. Maybe they'll go to heaven. In some other life, they'll be happy. Or the materialists say they'll be happy when they don't exist, because then at least they won't feel pain. They'll be anesthetized in permanent oblivion, but no hell for them, no matter how badly they behave. Pretend to guarantee that to people. That's what the materialists do. So this dream team gets back to the ideal of America, which is the idea that there could be such a thing as the pursuit of happiness. And even that you could be happy, actually, because some people pursued it and succeeded. And it didn't mean they succeeded just by getting rich. Because as people, if you look at history, rich people are not necessarily that happy. And the there is nowadays a science and the study of happiness, and they show that getting some more wealth from wherever level you are, a little more, up to a certain point, I think it's like 75,000 or something, then you feel happier. And then, but after that, when it goes more, and particularly, which I think they didn't necessarily address that well yet, particularly if a lot of other people are desperately needy around you, if you get more and more, then you get just paranoid. Because you know that they don't have it, the people around you, and they want it, and then you feel hunted by them, and you have to defend yourself, and you have to buy security, and you have to hire thugs to protect you, but they could turn on you themselves, because they're stronger than you. You want them to be strong to fend off others, but then they could also turn on you. Very often, people's own bodyguards, kings' bodyguards, are the ones that do in the kings, when the kings are not giving them enough spoils, and so forth, in history. So that's basically the plan. And then how to emerge, I haven't really figured out, and people can think about it, but how a particular president could emerge. Initially, when I had the idea, I thought to show that this was a sort of parking their egos on the side, all the candidates, and deciding to be a team and show the American people they can work together for the American people. And there's, you know, because it's such a contrast. The American people are now under the whim and the greedy behavior and the lies and everything of a person who told them, a certain number of them, actually the majority didn't believe him, but a powerful enough minority did, that he was the only one who could save them, he himself alone, and that he would have all the best people helping him do so. And as we've seen, he's appointed one crooked person after another, who are only helping more wealthy corporate people. Tax cut, 83% of it went to the top 1%. You know, the fake, it's not a middle class tax cut, that's a lie, isn't it a lie? He took away people's health care, wants to take it away, and so on. I mean, he's done everything against everyone. And he just said, I'm the only one who can save you. So now the idea that a team says, you can judge from our qualifications that we have the ability to manage this and manage that in an incumbent and effective way. And we're all going to do it together. And we're going to do it, all these levels of it too. And none of us is sold out, as you can see. And because we are not playing this as an ego game. So I thought in that, to make that point now, which is the political revolutionary point against business as usual politics. And we also will accept donations from wealthy people as well. This team will. And we will help Bernie not be angry with them. And we will appeal to Warren Buffett and Bill Gates and other such enlightened, wonderful, wealthy, super wealthy people. And we will say, your philanthropy is wonderful. And we need more of it now. And we're not necessarily going to tax it and just force you to give up money. But we would like you to give money, and we will create special funds, and you can be on a board how to spend those funds, so that if your thing is healthcare, if your thing is daycare centers, if your thing is education, if your thing is scientific research, if your thing is whatever it is, then you can designate that those given funds will be spent in those departments. In other words, we'll solicit your philanthropy rather than just force you. And basically, it's kind of like a wartime crisis, you realize. And this is a war. You know, Roosevelt overtaxed, of course, in that case, because it was an actual physical war that they fought in the Second World War. And it's a more subtle kind of war. Our enemy is something we created. It's a huge cloud of carbon dioxide and methane and other greenhouse gases that are overheating the planet, not just warming it, but overheating it. And this is jeopardizing the lives, the lands, the nations, the islands, the cities of billions of people, the river watersheds, the rivers of billions and billions of people. And that's, it's like, you know, there's a movie called Independence Day that I like. I like high-tech, you know, sexy rocket movies with heroes, naturally, like we all do, in which aliens attack the planet. And America resists, you know, that's like, and we succeed, Independence Day, right? And And so it's not aliens attacking the planet, but the one great enemy of humanity now is not, you know, China's great enemy is not the U.S. The U.S.'s great enemy is not Russia. Russia's great enemy is not the U.S. You know, Europe's great enemy, the European nationalist's great enemy is not the EU. Everybody's enemy is the disbalanced planetary climate, the deranged climate, which has been deranged by our greed, by us allowing this, you know, petroleum industry to go berserk and to use money to control all of our politics, whether they're called democratic or whether they're called authoritarian, they're still controlling it. And, we think poor Xi Jinping is a dictator, but Xi Jinping is frightened of his people. The Communist Party arrests them, a lot of them, because they're scared of them. And they have to somehow give them immediate gratifications of some type, so therefore they're stuck in the burning coal to provide electricity and so forth. Even though they know they can't forever, and they're manufacturing a lot of solar collectors and wind farms and things like that, but that has to immediately accelerate. That shift has to be immediate. No more subsidy to coal. And the only chance of doing that is this dream team, because America still has some degree of power if it's used multilaterally in its friendships with its allies and friendships. It does not have power to completely dominate unilaterally the world, like some deluded people think, but it still has exemplary, and especially it has exemplary power. It has the power of taking responsibility, of putting one's ego aside, of doing what's good for the right for the people, you know, which is the essence of that's what's called democracy, ruled by the people, of the people, by the people, for the people, right? Famous Abraham Lincoln thing. And so in that leadership role, this dream team is leading a global response to the alien. And in this case, the alien is 3 degrees centigrade. Like an envelope of 3-4 degrees centigrade that will be enveloping this planet within 10 to 15 years. It's already enveloping it, but it will be much more strangulating within 10 more years. And so another 4 years of completely pushing in the wrong direction, the exact opposite direction, under the pretense that one doesn't know that this is happening. Like, it is intolerable. It's totally intolerable. And actually, I think if we had this dream team, and if this enkindled a spirit in people of rising above their petty prejudices and their confusions and their believing in slogans and false and lies that they, in a way, really know intuitively are lies, but so they're just sort of entertaining, I wouldn't even be surprised if Exxon and Chevron and Mobil and the big oil giants didn't decide to air their own science and to repent of their having created this confusion in people's minds that there is no such thing as this climate danger and this overheating. And they themselves would forswear their subsidies, or rather take subsidies to build, because they're endangered as an industry, actually. They will eventually lose their role as an industry, and they will be considered climate criminals by people who become climate refugees, as everyone in California will become within 15 years at the present rate of continued increase of thermal pollution. They themselves will say, shift the subsidies so we will become solar collector companies, we'll become wind farm companies, we'll become electrical backbone companies. You know, we'll move into renewable, non-polluting energy sources and remain still big energy companies. Fine, do that. We'll be the kings of making distributed energy production, and we'll still be very powerful and wealthy. And we'll lead this, and we will not be considered criminals by people who are harmed right now and by the many generations who will be massively harmed in the future if we keep insisting on going against what we know, because Exxon knew from the 70s that this was happening. Their own scientists knew that. And this is publicly known, but not widely enough, because they are controlling the media still. But it's known. and will be vastly known in the future. Their names will go down in infamy in the future, not in the near future too. So happy 4th of July. And this is a happiness thing, by the way. This is not fear. This is not anger. Well, there is fear, but it's a rational fear. It's like the fear you feel when you see a Big Mac truck bearing down on you on the highway with the driver passed out or something, or looking the other way, and you can see the driver's not aware of your presence. Then you will feel a fear, and that fear should enable you to get an extra spurt of adrenaline and jump out of the way. So it isn't an irrational, paralyzing fear. It's a fear of not acting now to in a revolutionary way, and not a violent revolutionary way, in a happy way, in an unviolent, and a diminishment of violent, happy way, and a joyful, because we still can do something about it. Like the joy we have when we look at our children, and we can think, yes, we are saving their environment. They will live in a wonderful garden of a world. That we're not going to send them into a desert, an overheated desert plagued by storms and tornadoes and floods and loss of land and poisoned food and etc. We would not doom them to that situation. So happy 4th of July. And when, as you see the firecrackers zooming and the rocket's red glare, think of it as the rocket of creative genius, of the dream team doing something unprecedented in our political history, of teaming together a little bit close to precedent in the world wars because of the direness of the danger, obvious direness of the danger, but really unprecedented because here the war is against our own negative tendency to be greedy and produce this and short term and destroy the source of wealth and source of livelihood of the future generations. So think of the rockets going off as brilliant new ideas and brilliant ways to save energy and to save money and to save people's lives and to save face and to save suffering. Each one is going off like that as you enjoy the evening's celebrations, okay? So thank you very much.